Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Try Catch, powered by EI2. My name is Sydney Andreessen. I'm an application developer here at our association's Farm Credit Services of America, Frontier Farm Credit, and Ag Country Farm Credit. I'm here again with some teammates from our innovation side of the house, and I'll just take this chance to shout out, if you haven't seen our previous episode already, go ahead and check that out, where we introduce these teammates and introduce what is innovation, what it's not, and just how we think about it. And today we are continuing on with the topic of innovation, specifically about where do ideas come from and how we gather them. So I've got our innovation managers here with me today, Michael, Amy, and Dane. And as we talked about in the last episode, they each kind of have their own focus, their own lane. And so we're going to talk to each of them about where do ideas come from, especially related to their lane. So I'm going to start first with Michael and the educate lane that he works in.
Yeah, so I guess I would start by kind of even reframing the question a little bit and say coming up with ideas, where they come from, is like almost never the problem. There's too many cliche phrases to use, but you know, ideas are like elbows. Everybody generally has at least one, kind of thing. You know, I mean, everybody's got them. They just simply aren't really the problem, but honing in on the right ideas that have the best chance for success, that's really where the challenge is. And so kind of carrying over from some of the things we talked about last time with being anchored in who we are and our strategy and everything, I like to think about the framework. And so from like an educate perspective, let's talk about some of the frameworks around that. And then Amy and Dane will go into the, like the fun stuff. But like, I think about it as a three-step process: who we are, where we are, and then exploring the gap between those things. So who we are is like, who are we as a company, right? We have our we are statements. We have our mission. We have who we're trying to be in the market. We have who we are culturally. And that's a really important part of what kinds of ideas we should pursue. We also have a strategy, and we have things that we're trying to accomplish. So what are we already focused on? Understanding who we are is critically important when we're trying to hone in on the right ideas. But then also understanding where we are kind of in the world today, and maybe even more importantly for innovation, where the world's going, is really, really important. This one starts to get a little trickier. Who we are, you can kind of just look around and you can figure out a lot of those things by just being aware of your company, right? And we can be aware of our association and understand who we are. But where we are, and more importantly, where the world's going, can be tricky for folks because there's so many things to start thinking about. I particularly like a framework, and I can share this with anybody who's interested. It's kind of a forces and trends environment map that talks about just kind of helping you with some ideas. So what are key trends? What are industry forces? What are market forces? What are some macroeconomic forces? The things that I like about this particular framework is that each one of those then has subcategories. So like under market forces, we could have market issues, we could have needs and demands, segments. And for each one of those, I've got some prompting questions of three or four questions of how you might think about that. So like you could almost pick one of any of these 15 different categories and just start. And just if you don't know where to begin, there's tons of frameworks. But I think the most important thing is if you can anchor in who we are and where the world's going, and then look at the gap between those two things, now you're starting to get not just ideas that could be interesting for the world, but also fit who we are. And this is where I come to like maybe the last kind of component of this. We have to be thinking about, we talked about this in the last episode, we have to be thinking about both sides of the value coin, right? Things that make sense for the customer and provide real value for them, but also things that provide real value for the company. That's where the meaningful innovation in our kind of organization is really going to take place. So I kind of think about that as a framework to start with for where ideas come from, or more importantly, how we hone in on the right ideas. And then that gap, we explore and we experiment. And that is as good a segue as I can come up with to point to my learned colleagues. But that's really where we want to go. Understand those things and then we start to explore and we start to experiment.
Well, I think to help transition, the frameworks, you know, there's tons of frameworks out there.
Yeah.
Pick any framework, right?
Right, right.
Can only get you so far. Like, that's a very good exercise internally, but then how do you go out and either look exploring for someone who's already solving it, has a solution or has some idea or capability, or you experiment. And again, you can experiment with the people that you're exploring, other companies outside of our four walls.
Absolutely.
Or experiment internally. And Sydney can build us a new cool widget, app.
Absolutely.
Something. All the cool stuff.
Absolutely. So we're already like tying it all together. Mm-hmm. Our frameworks in the educate lane, exploring, experimenting. Specifically, let's go to Amy now for the explore lane of things.
Yeah, Michael, I like how you went back with the culture aspect of it, because during some of the partnerships, we're looking at a lot of different things. So we have lots of partners. There's so many options out there to partner with different companies. So for example, like we have the Combine, we have Plug and Play, we've got Grand Farm, we've got UNL. And sometimes we come across some of the companies that I'm like, this is just not a culture fit for us. Mm-hmm. And so that will determine whether we want to continue down some of those paths, like whether we want to go to more experimentation, because we want to make sure that's the right fit for us. And it's going back to the culture that Michael talked about too, because I think it's really important to think about, because there's been times where I've been working with a company and I'm like, I don't think the stakeholders are going to really want to do this, because I don't think they're going to like the way the culture is run at this company. So I think that's really important to point out, and I really liked how you approached that. So the other thing, when we're talking with some of the partners, sometimes we love to start with a problem that we have, but there's also other opportunities where I'm sitting at a conference or in a session and I'm like, there's a solution, but I do know we have this problem, but there's a perfect solution. But it just took me back to like, okay, now I remember, like, okay, is this truly a problem that we have? Is it high priority or not? Mm-hmm. Like, we have to go back to the steps, to step one, which is what is the current problem that they're trying to solve, even though the solution's right there and I know it's going to be a great solution. It's just, do we actually have that problem? And so you have to go back. I was actually just talking with UNL the other day and ideating with them. And it was kind of fun because I was like asking them, what are your needs? What do you guys think a great partnership would look like? And they're just kind of spitballing things out. And I was just like, oh, I have a great idea. Let me go test a few things like back home and like make sure that it's the right fit before I'm like go on and say like, no, we're going to do this, because I want to make sure we're going back to the problem. So there's always times where I'm sitting with my partners and thinking through things, but I always have to come back to the organization and say, okay, is this the right thing that we need to look at? Do we need to have more experimentation, or do we need to explore more? The other thing that we look at is adjacent markets. Michael kind of talked about this too, is what's the value for the customer? And so sometimes there's a different adjacent markets we look at. So InsurTech is another adjacent market that we really, really look at. Fitness is another one that I like started looking to, and people are like, how does fitness go back into agriculture, like, or finance? And I'm looking at the trends that's happening in fitness, and there's like gamification of fitness. How do we bring that back into our world and making sure that it's the right fit for us? And so looking at the trends that are happening and exploring those trends really give us some different ideas that come through. Yeah, they might be further out because gamification, yeah, there's YouTube channels that farmers are on and stuff like that, but how can we relate that back to our organization that's more on the finance side for ag? And so like, fitness was kind of a really, really hard crossover for me. But at the same time, I'm like, there's something there, because people are talking about virtual reality and fitness. And I was like, okay, how does that come back to our organization? So it's kind of fun to look at that stuff too. The other thing is to look at is like the competition that's around us. So we have got many different competitors, whether it be community banks. What are they doing in the area of innovation? Can we co-build something? Can we partner something? Like, are they working on something really cool that we're like, this will fit our problem that we need to solve for? So looking at competition will really help. Looking at that gap that Michael was talking about too. Like looking farther out, but also where's the gap in between? So I like how you brought that in too, because I think that's another key player when we're looking at competition, that could we potentially work with them, or is there another solution that's going to better fit us? And so that's kind of what I'm looking at when we're doing some explorer opportunities in our innovation area.
I like one thing that I would maybe reiterate that you also reiterated, that cultural thing. I think there's like this stigma around innovation of thinking about things practically and like, well, we want to actually deliver something. that if all we ever do is experiment and explore, it never goes anywhere, then what's the point, right? I mean, ultimately, really, what's the point? We got creative and we did some fun stuff that we could point at, but it didn't ever actually deliver any value. And I think that's where understanding who we are and the culture and the problems we actually have, even though there may be a dozen or a thousand really cool ideas over here, they may not be right for us.
Or the right time.
Or the right time. And so, like, yeah, having that as that anchoring for the exploration. And I love the your point about making sure that our fit with the people who may be potential partners and solution providers actually makes sense for who we are. That's really interesting. Makes a lot of sense.
This is really cool for me to hear personally from my side of the house, being so embedded in the delivery side, right? Where when things come to my desk, we're pretty sure that these things are a close fit and a priority for now. But it's cool to hear that other side of the funnel and how we're thinking out to things like fitness and dreaming big, but also hearing how you're constantly thinking, okay, how can I bring this back to us? Dream big and then bring it back. Yep. That's really cool to hear. On the explore side of things, now let's go to Dane for experimentation.
Well, yeah, experiment. Like I said earlier, a framework can get you so far. And so at some point, you got to take that step. You got to take a leap of faith. You're never going to have perfect information to find out if an idea is something worth doing. So you have to at least try to experiment or find that first step. And so I think experiments also drive new ideas, right? So you're trying something, maybe let's call it 80% of your experiment is failing, but 20% is working. Maybe that one little button that we put out there to sign people up is just whatever we tried is really working. Okay, how do we take that now and partner and pair it up with another idea? Or how do we and run another experiment? So like, I think experiments can drive ideas, and then also experiments can help quickly figure out if it's worth an idea worth doing. And I love, like, Amy and Michael, what you've talked about too, about our culture. And I see that almost as like an asset that we have to consider as we're thinking about what experiments, what ideas to run with. And same with like our capabilities. How capable are we? Like, that's another kind of framework that we have to put in. What capabilities from a software development standpoint, or even just from a business model standpoint, do we have or can operate in?
One thing I'd like to add, though, to Dane that you're talking about is with the learnings from the experimentation might pivot the partner that we're working with or even just the whole experiment itself. And so there's often times when we're working with a third party company, and recently with one of the pilots that we were running, we had to pivot because it wasn't exactly what the stakeholders really wanted. And so at least the company was willing to pivot a little bit for us. But there's also new products or services that they're doing that we're learning about too. And like, oh, let's experiment with this the next time that we go through this. And so, yeah, I think that's really important to look at too, is the learnings that from the experiment. But there's also a lot of pivoting that's going on too.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think you hit on a key characteristic that we have to have as innovators, and that is like holding on to our solutions lightly and loosely, but falling in love with the problem that we're trying to solve and being willing to listen to where it goes. But also being willing to be wrong about the problem. Like, very short story, we had some folks doing some training on how to interview customers. And so they had like 3 hours to go interview people on the streets of New York City, which to me sounds terrifying, but like they loved this idea. So they're going out and they're like, oh, we're going to come up with this crazy idea to do a frequent flyer kind of program for riding the subway. And so they started interviewing people that were walking onto the subway. They're like, hey, so we want to start this, like, you know, punch card for the subway so you get a ride free. And nobody was interested, but people kept bringing up the same problem. Now, they didn't just say, we want to do this. What they asked was, tell me about your experience. What frustrates you when you're riding the subway? And everybody brought up the same problem. They hated it when people didn't give up their seats for folks who needed them, who were elderly, who were disabled, who had young kids. They're like, it really irritates me. One of the guys who said it was in a wheelchair, and it irritated him when people wouldn't. He's like, I've already got a chair. But this lady with her three kids is standing because this guy over here won't get up. And they realized they were attacking the wrong problem. The thing people cared about was something entirely different. And so they pivoted their interviews and they pivoted their little pitch for the 3-hour experiment that they did just to learn how to talk to people. So I think there's this need for us when we explore and we experiment. We need to understand kind of these frameworks of where we're at, that's great. But we also need to be willing to be wrong, not just about our solution, but even potentially about what we think the problem actually is when we see data that tells us something new.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Michael, because it takes me back within the Explore too. Is like if we're looking at a trend, for example, like gamification, it's great to be able to go out and do those customer interviews to make sure that like our customers are interested in that. Mm-hmm. That's part of my favorite part of this job is actually going out to interview to learn more about actually, is this the current problem that we're trying to do and look at? Or is there another reason to pivot because this isn't actually the problem that I thought, my assumption was incorrect.
Yeah.
I need to pivot my research and my findings and look at the trends that are happening that it's real world to those people. And I love that example because I will say the discovery phase is my favorite part of the process because I get to talk to people and understand their problems.
Well, it brings it back.
It is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it brings it back to what Dane said. You learned a whole new idea. This idea came from something that you thought one thing and you learned something new through exploration, through experimentation. Yeah. And now you have a brand new idea that actually people might care about.
So, right. I was just going to say, like, ideas don't just come in internally in these four walls. Like, you're probably going to get better ideas and problems to solve by talking to customers. Yeah. Well, definitely that. Talking to customers, talking to partners, just being outside, getting out of here, getting into to the rural areas, figure out what problems there are.
We like to dream big, but as Amy was saying earlier, we got to bring it back too. And let's talk about innovating within constraints.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting topic and one that we talk about a lot because the reality is we have guardrails. Now, we put some guardrails around ourselves. The very framework that I was kind of proposing we could use, and to Dane's point, any framework is great. It just, this particular one from Strategizer, the environment map, I'm realizing I don't have footnotes verbally, so I've got a verbally footnote. You know, it's a great one. I just happen to like it, but there's you know, 100 other frameworks to use. Those guardrails help. They help you focus in. The whole point that we were making earlier is that we are trying to do innovation for our association and for our customers. And so we want to actually deliver something and we want to be pursuing and spending our limited resources and time on the things that have the most, the highest chance of success to actually deliver value. And so we use frameworks like this and guardrails to help us hone in and focus on the things, always with an eye outside to see what inspiration we can draw in. But, you know, we need to focus there. And I think constraints can breed creativity. I have a good friend, Michael Glasny. He's a product coach that I worked with at a former position. And he used to say when he was working with product teams and they'd be like, well, I don't know how we could run an experiment on that. He's like, okay, well, imagine the CEO is in this meeting right now and he tells you, I don't need a solution, but I need new information by Friday. What are you going to do then? You find ways. You find ways to run some sort of test. It'll get you new information that you didn't have before, to ask some new question, to talk to some new, and that kind of constraint, and our CEO is not going to come in and tell you, you need to have information to me by Friday, but imagining those kinds of constraints that are real and actually pursue or, you know, inspire action, you find ways to get creative and you find ways to do what you need to do to find new information. So I think constraints, be they whatever they could be, regulatory, all sorts of things, they're going to help us look for creative solutions and be innovative within them. And they're not a thing to be afraid of. They're a thing to recognize, acknowledge, and understand. And then, you know what? Leverage to draw you and push you to solutions you may not have looked for before.
I like that. The word constraint can feel like this like negative cloud, but turning it into this like positive opportunity or motivator, I think is a good outlook.
Yeah. And I like the word constraint, but at the same time, we're an innovation. So How do you like, and I know we always bring it back to our customers and our focus areas, but at the same time, let's be innovative too. I mean, how do you go? Because I mean, yeah, we have regulations around what we can do for certain things within our system, right? But at the same time, like, can we change policy? Can we change the way that the Farm Credit Administration thinks about things? Like, is there a way to change that.
Challenge the constraints as well. Exactly.
Challenge it.
They're more rubber bands than steel hoops, right? They might stretch a little bit depending. And yeah, absolutely. We definitely should. Yeah. That's really interesting.
All right. Well, thank you all here in the room, Dane, Amy, and Michael. And thank you to listeners who have joined us for this episode. I hope you go back in and watch our previous episode and then stick around because we're going to bring these folks back and talk about trends in innovation, whether it's the ag, fin, or tech sector. We kind of live in a combo of those and other conversations as well. So that'll be a wrap on this episode of TriCatch powered by EI2. Have a good one.